Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's lovely to have you with us again today. And today we're starting off our program with an article titled Reason and Intuition by the Master through Benjamin Krem. We are entering an age in which reason will gradually be replaced by the higher faculty of intuition, that which constitutes the reasoning faculty in man and of which he is justly proud, will one day drop beneath the threshold of consciousness and become as instinctive as breathing or moving is today. There lies ahead of man an immense increase in awareness through the unfolding of his intuition, an awareness of states of being as yet altogether unknown to him, but which lie ready to be perceived by his awakened mind. All expansions of consciousness are preceded by periods of tension, and this time of conflict and difficulty through which mankind is now passing will be succeeded by one of tranquility and poise, which will set the stage for the gradual flowering of the intuition. When that happens, man will know directly, past all gainsaying, his true nature as a soul created in the image of God.
Through the awakened intuition, man will discover the secrets of nature and learn to play his part in the plan of evolution for all the kingdoms. He will discover within himself faculties and knowledge beyond his ability to dream. All he needs to know will come readily to his illumined mind. The next step in the flowering of the race will be the advent of those souls in whom the intuitive faculty is already active and potent. Those souls are now being gathered on the inner planes of life and soon will make their appearance. They will constitute the next sub-race of the present fifth root race and will lead humanity out of the darkness of the limited rational mind into the light of the intuition. All things will become possible for man. The light of the soul will play upon man's problems and simultaneously show the solution to these problems. By straight knowledge, man will move unerringly to his goal.
That which we call reason has played its part and has brought man to the threshold of divinity, preparing him for its own replacement by the faculties of the higher mind. Strictly speaking, that which is normally called intuition stems from the manasic level of consciousness, whereas true intuition has its origin in the higher Buddhic level. It is essentially loving understanding or true wisdom. Separateness is unknown when the intuition functions. The oneness of all things is directly perceived. The illusions of the rational mind are transcended and reality is known. In the light of the intuition, man will rebuild his world and tread the path of God, following the steps of all those who have gone before and realized themselves as sons of God. Our task, when living and working among you, will be to stimulate, wherever possible, this higher faculty of mind and lead you forward on the way.
Even now, the doors of perception are being opened, and many are finding themselves possessors of intuitive truths. Soul alignment has opened the channels, and much light descends. A clearer perception of reality becomes possible for the race in its hour of greatest need and augurs well for the future. As the intuition unfolds, so do the separative tendencies of the rationalizing mind diminish, and a healthier climate for all relationships is the beneficent result. The task ahead is clear. Open the windows of the soul and let the soul's light illumine your lives. Through the awakened intuition, allow the soul's knowledge and purpose to be expressed. Know the meaning of compassion and spread that love abroad. Allow your soul's wisdom to banish all illusion and become a light for your brothers. That is the task of all who would tread the path of light. Awaken the intuition and see clearly the plan. Awaken the intuition and dissolve the darkness. Awaken the intuition and cast out all fear. And just a little bit of background about this and other articles by Benjamin Krem's master. This one was published originally in September 1982. And the articles are republished whenever appropriate according to world circumstances. They can often feel more relevant than at the time they were originally published. And this particular one, I think, reminds us of humanity's potential. And it points to a more enlightened future as we learn increasingly to draw on the faculties of the soul.
And now this next piece is from Share magazine, and the section is called Point of View. The following essay is titled Sharing is Key to a New Economic and Democratic Order, and it's by Graham Peebles. In order to meet the challenges of these times, fundamental change to the socio-economic order is needed. Environmental catastrophe is the major issue, together with armed conflict, potentially nuclear. Both threaten the survival of humanity and the planet, and both are widely ignored by those in power, whose short-term approach and obsession with the economy and a nationalistic, introspective view of the world is leading us to the precipice of disaster. If humanity is to survive these interconnected crises and overcome other crucial challenges, including extreme poverty, social injustice, and the displacement of people, a totally new vision of the way society functions is required. At the root of much, if not all, of the chaos is our socio-economic model combined with inadequate, artificial forms of democratic governance. State and private institutions are interdependent monopolies of power that require radical democratization. Deep-rooted systemic deficiencies must be addressed, as well as altogether different values to those that are currently encouraged or inculcated.
Neoliberalism has infiltrated all areas of society and permeated life in virtually every corner of the world. It is a dysfunctional system that, instead of serving human need, is designed to provide wealth beyond the dreams of avarice for a privileged few, as Noam Chomsky puts it. And Noam Chomsky, by the way, is a philosopher and a political activist. Its very existence denies the manifestation of real democracy. Following from this paradigm of injustice is extreme inequality, leading to a wide range of social ills, high levels of unemployment, particularly among the young in many parts of the world, low investment in public services, and as the political and economic scientist C.J. Polycrenu says, rapidly declining standards of living, dangerously high levels of both public and corporate debt, a financial system that remains out of whack, and ecological collapse. It is a decrepit global system propped up by the guardians of the status quo, who are intellectually bankrupt, have no answers to the issues of the day, but, desperate to cling on to power, use all their tools of control to resist change.
Within the existing forms, political influence is concentrated in the hands of a tiny group of people and institutions. They run the corporate organizations and people, the governing executive. These are the wealthy and powerful, the ruling elite. Corporations and their masters dominate this entitled ensemble. Huge, tyrannical institutions, unaccountable bodies with enormous power. As Noam Chomsky states, corporations are one of the most tyrannical systems human beings have ever devised. Control is concentrated at the top from where policy is made and orders are issued. Managers pass on instructions and workers are expected to obey, conform and be thankful to the beneficent company for buying their labour, albeit for a pittance compared to the paychecks of the boardroom. This is little more than wage slavery.
The reason for being of the corporate world is to maximise market share and generate profits, irrespective of the impact on people or the environment. To do this, they need their population to behave in ways consistent with their ideological approach to life, namely consumerism. Their persuasive message of pleasure and competition is spread to a weary populace via the communications industry, which they happen to own, the media, entertainment sector, and advertising companies. These bodies colour the social atmosphere, are responsible for setting the public agenda, facilitating collective discussion, and, together with education and organised religion, are the principal outlets for mass conditioning. Or what Walter Lippmann, in the book Public Opinion, which was published way back in 1922, said, is called the manufacture of consent. Corporate institutions actively work to curtail democracy and deny the establishment of a just economic system. They have tremendous influence over government policy and consistently obstruct environmental legislation. They operate in secret and have been granted extraordinary rights and access.
Over the last 30 years or so, a worldwide protest movement has developed. Huge numbers of people have united, demanding socio-economic and democratic change to be listened to by remote, arrogant politicians and for a meaningful global response to the environmental crisis. In scale and scope, the movement is unprecedented. People of all ages have come together expressing collective frustrations, demanding a new approach to living. The Arab Spring and the Occupy movement were prominent expressions of the same underlying demand for change, and, it could be argued, so were Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, albeit in a distorted reactionary form. Despite setbacks, an irresistible current of change is sweeping the world that will not be extinguished. The old forms must give way to the emerging ways of the time, the old economic, political, social, and religious forms that have crystallized and are incapable of responding to the needs of the many.
The 2008 financial crisis revealed some of the inherent flaws in the economic model. Since then, politics has become more polarized and reactionary. Wages have been frozen, austerity has been enforced, punishing the poorest in society, and the financial system has been allowed to continue much the same. The lack of genuine change means that a second crash is a real possibility. Indeed, perhaps that's what it will take to bring about the lasting systemic change that so many yearn for. As stated in the introductory literature for the book titled New Thinking for the British Economy, the evident failings of our present economic system and the growing political mobilisation for change suggests that we may be on the cusp of another major shift in economic thinking and policy. A shift away from systems of governance where a few people have control, and an unjust, unsustainable, environmentally abusive economic model, to a sustainable, participatory and just way of living.
The essential element in harmonious living and justice is absent from both the economic and political spheres. The principle of sharing, placing sharing at the heart of a new economic paradigm, will do more than any other single factor to bring about real change. It would completely alter the collective social atmosphere and allow for a range of other positive democratic ideals, such as social justice, tolerance, and compassion, to manifest. Sharing of resources, including food, water, and land, wealth, income, knowledge, skills, ideas, sharing in the management of the institutions, that's both state and private, that dominate society, and the bodies that one happens to work in or study at, and crucially sharing in the decisions and ideas that shape our lives, that is real participation.
In corporate democracies, the right to vote and run civil society may exist. There may even be an independent judiciary, the observation of human rights, more or less, and unfettered, albeit monitored, access to information. But without social justice and meaningful participation, it is not really democracy. It is an inadequate ideological construct, the nature and structure of which is set by those sitting within gilded offices of power who limit its scope and control its expression. It is democracy controlled by the corporate world, entwined with the methodology of the market. As such, its exponents are complicit in perpetuating injustice, maintaining concentrations of power, facilitating division, and encouraging wage slavery. Participation is at best limited. Competition, greed, and personal gain over collective well-being are promoted and lived. Material success is held up as the aim of life. Selfish tendencies are encouraged, feeding intolerance and division, all of which work to deny true democracy and stifle the good in humanity.
Real democracy is meaningful participation in all socio-political, economic, and business institutions. When this takes place, positive aspects of human nature will begin to flourish, and the structures that perpetuate the existing injustices will crumble under the weight of the good. Group participation, social responsibility, and unity are essential elements in bringing about such a change and are key principles of the time. At their heart and from which all else flows must be sharing, and for a range of reasons. Sharing breaks down divisions and engenders trust. Kindness grows, and humanity's inherent goodness can flower. Sharing is an expression and acknowledgement of our common humanity. Cooperation takes place when we share, and as people cooperate, they build relationships, form groups, and exchange ideas. Without sharing, the corrosive patterns of the present will continue.
As Chomsky puts it, if we were to move towards real democracy, we would say that there should be no maldistribution of power in determining what's produced, what's distributed, what's invested, and so on. Rather, that's a problem for the entire community. In fact, my own personal view is unless we move in that direction, human society probably isn't going to survive. This is a view many hold. However, if one looks beyond the ugly theatrics of nationalism and fear, an alternative vision of the future can be seen. A coalition of change is forming throughout the world, and a shift in consciousness is underway. Perhaps unsurprisingly, it is young people who are leading the way. They are less conditioned by the old order, have a powerful sense of social justice and freedom, and care deeply about the natural environment. We are at the beginning of the age of sharing, but it will not be gifted to us. Like movements of change throughout history, it will be brought about by consistent, coordinated action, by demanding change, by recognizing that we are all responsible for this world, and that if we want a new and just society, we have to build it.
Ender, thank you very much for listening in today. We hope you have enjoyed this point of view and other points. And if you'd like to know more, you could write to us at sharenz@yahoo.com, or you could look us up on the website at share-international.org. Thank you, and love and blessings to all.